My name is Amy Esdorn, and I am here at the Society of Petroleum Engineers Annual Technical Conference and Exhibition at the George R. Brown Convention Center in Houston, Texas. Today is September 28th, 2015, and I'm speaking with Shauna Noonan. Shauna, thank you for participating in this project.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
So let's begin. My first question for you is, what was the industry like when you started in your career?
I graduated with my Bachelor's of Petroleum Engineering in 1993, and at the time in Canada, we were going through a small industry downturn. So a lot of my classmates had trouble getting jobs. Many of the oil and service companies had hiring freezes, and even students who had done internships, they found if they did the internship with the same company year after year, when it came to graduating and that company had a hiring freeze, it was very difficult for them to find a position. I made sure during my internships through college, I worked for a different company each time. And it turned out when I graduated, half of those companies had hiring freezes, the other half did not. So due to a wise decision I made early on in college, I was lucky to get hired on with Chevron Canada Resources when I graduated.
That's really great, because I think a lot of times students would think, oh, it's better to go with the same company and sort of build that sort of relationship there. But you're saying that your strategy really actually benefited you.
Yes, and it also allowed me to look at what type of company did I want to work for as well.
That's smart. So, and in the end, you went with, again, you went
Chevron Canada Resources.
Wonderful. And so what was your first job?
It was an actual interesting program, per se, when you hired on as an engineer with Chevron Canada. Whether you eventually wanted to be a production engineer, a drilling engineer, a reservoir, you all started out sitting the rigs for the first number of years. They had a huge checklist that you had to do first when you showed up for your first day of work. Of course, you had to go through all the mandatory safety classes. Then they assigned you to a rig that already had a rig consultant whose job was not only to work the well site, but also to train that young engineer that was there. And usually about 6 months, once that rig consultant gave Chevron the go-ahead that you were capable of supervising your own workover rig, or it could have been a completion rig, could have been a drilling rig, then they assigned you to one and gave you this huge checklist. You had to do so many hydraulic fracturing jobs, so many well deepenings, install certain pieces of equipment. So you'd actually, all total, for maybe about 2 to 3 years, be a rig consultant. You knew what all the equipment that went in the well looked like. You not only learned to read a workover program, but because you were there hands-on, you knew how to write one. Working a well site is all about scheduling, timing with equipment in, equipment out, and it also put you right to face with the people that are working the rigs and also the field operators. And I will say, you may have been the only person on the well site that had an engineering degree, but I guarantee most of those people on that well site knew way more than you did, and it was an excellent environment to learn from. I don't think many companies have that type of program anymore, and that was specifically why I actually chose that job with Chevron, to get that amount of training. I am not a tomboy by any means, so it was very much out of my comfort zone to go and just work rigs for the first number of years, but it actually helped me get to where I am today.
So you said that the rig consultant would be in charge of you, sort of training you on the job training. And so how many, I guess, new engineers would a rig consultant be training at any time?
Oh, only one at a time.
Only one at a time. So that was pretty good one-on-one training then.
Yes, it was. It was excellent.
And it was for 2 to 3 years?
About 2 to 3 years. Again, you had to complete that checklist. And once you had done that, then you got assigned to a field engineering position.
And so that was the next sort of step in your career.
That was the next step. I was a field engineer in Fox Creek, Alberta, which is as far away from civilization at the time you could be.
So trace for me, if you will, your the path that your career took from your training all the way to today.
Well, for Canadian engineer, usually the final stop is Calgary. That's the oil mecca. But I always felt, for me personally, that was not where I wanted to end up. I wanted to get a chance to work international projects, get a chance to work in the United States. So actually, in 1997, I managed to get a job transfer to Houston in a role that actually allowed me to travel around the world and work with people in different countries and cultures. Now, repeat that question again, because
sure,
I don't think I quite got there.
I was just saying, what if you could trace the path that your career took from the very beginning to today?
Okay. Well, again, the first big decision was taking an expat position, and that, in essence, to grow, to see really what's out there and kind of carve my own path. One thing I decided to do early on was consult with as many mentors and people on how they did their careers and not necessarily follow what they did, but use it to carve out my own path. Because that's one thing I learned early on, too, is no one is ever going to give you a list or a roadmap as to where you start, where you end up. And I think that with a lot of young engineers today, they don't realize that. That's why that first 5 years is so difficult, because you kind of feel lost, because you've just gone through college where it's been predetermined. Year one, you take this. Year two, you take this. And then they'll get to an oil company or a service company. They'll be in a training program maybe for 6 months, a year. I was lucky, it was 2 years, 2 to 3 years with the rigs. But after that, you're on your own. So I decided I'm going to go to the U.S. I managed to get that job transfer against the advice of others, because they thought when I'd be too young to go, why would I ever want to leave Canada? And then when I got to the U.S., I took a lot of assignments where I could travel a lot, interact with as many people, do as many industry events as I could. I learned early on that I am not the sharpest pencil in the box. I know that. I'm not what your typical engineer would be, but I am the type of person where I will find out who knows that answer. I will network well with them, to a point that if I need to contact them, I know in a short time frame they're going to answer my call. So I became very resourceful through, and that's where SBE has been instrumental. But yeah, through industry work, getting to travel, just got really well networked. And then one of the other big things I did was I learned to figure out what my niche was early on. Against the advice of many people who feels that engineers should be general. You should know a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And early on in the field, I started to work with artificial lift. That's basically with downhole pumping systems, or they may not be actually mechanical systems, because gas lift is an artificial lift system. But basically, when the reservoir does not have enough energy to bring the fluid to surface, that's what an artificial lift engineer does. And I noticed in the industry that many of the artificial lift experts were on the aging precipice of the demographic, and so I realized here is my opportunity to learn as much as I could from those individuals, and when they left the industry, that would position me very well to be the next artificial lift champion, and that's actually what it had done. But again, I had to fight to remain to be an artificial lift against companies' recommendations to be all general, get as well networked and work on API or other industry standards to do with artificial lift. Started to publish early. That was a decision to really get myself established. And years later, I'm happy to say that I've got 25 publications out there related to artificial lift. I've done 2 digital series for SBE. I've been given industry awards for what I've done. So my early decisions help just kind of take its course to get me where I am today.
That's great. It sounds like you really sort of bucked a lot of trends and sort of did the thing that you saw would be in your best interest in that way, instead of just going ahead and following. But you said that you spoke to mentors and you saw sort of what they had done. What sort of, I guess if you could give advice as far as with a mentorship, a lot of people think when somebody's mentoring you, the best idea is to follow their advice really, really closely, or their example. So what, I guess my question is what, how do you know when not to do that? Or when is that just a personal sort of experience for you to say, okay, yeah, this is good so far, but not for me? Or how do you?
That's an excellent question, because a lot, I'd say about 50% of the time I've taken the advice of my mentors. Of course, in this industry, there's very few females. So a lot of the mentors' advice were men who, you know, with their own families, you know, most of the wives were staying home. And so they never had to deal with issues with children. Or working international, there's a lot of nannies. There's a lot of different things. So I'll split it into mentorship and what advice I took on the career side and then also on the personal side. So I knew I wanted to have a family. I did not want to postpone a family per se. I wanted to be able to at least have my first child by the time I was 30. I decided early on that I wanted to raise my own children. I did not want it to be done with a nanny. I attended a conference in Canada where a lady, she was the VP of Petro-Canada, and the advice that she gave was, pay for the best child care out there and you will be much more productive in your job. And I learned that a little bit the hard way when the first time putting my young daughter in daycare, the only daycare we could get at was maybe not necessarily the best one. And I tell you, I worried at work all day long about my child. But when we could get into the better daycares, and again, it's expensive, it's a conscious decision. You know, are you going to be putting a huge amount of money into childcare? In the end, it did help me at work be more productive. I knew my child was being taken care of very, very well. Again, my mentors, my male mentors, could never understand why didn't I get a nanny, because there'd be times where the daycare would call me and say, your child's running a fever, can you please get your child? My husband also works. He used to travel a lot. So that was a little bit hard, and I think I ended up passing on certain job opportunities just to give me that flexibility to raise my children on my own. So that's the personal side. On the professional side, some of the advice with the mentors I again had was, you know, you work long hours. And again, I'm very family-centric. You know, that's the way they would show up at work at 5 o'clock in the morning and then leave at 8 o'clock at night. And when I sat back and watched a lot of these individuals, I could be just as productive, just get as much as work done in the regular work hours if I just sat down and put my mind to it. Again, it's not running, taking coffee breaks and different things like this. So I was able to demonstrate to my management that I could still have good family time, do just the regular hours, not the long overtime at the office, get my job done, and I was still able to get my promotions, get, you know, great performance rankings and stuff like this, because again, it's not the face time in the office, it's actually what you do with your time when you're there.
That's great. Those were really interesting answers. Thank you for sharing that. So you kind of touched on it a little bit, but I guess what challenges have you faced in your career?
The biggest challenge, of course, is the decision to be family focused. I have not worked internationally other than the U.S., but now I've lived here long enough. I am a permanent U.S. resident. So I could have been higher up the ladder than I am now. Would that make me any happier? Not really, because I know I've developed my children, my family, the way I want to. So that would have been the biggest one. And what's interesting, too, is early on in the career, again, as an engineer, you love data. So myself and another young drilling engineer, her and I, this is just before we started to have a family, and we wanted to understand within the company, how did the women engineers and even the geoscientists, how did the ones that were successful working internationally, how did they do it? How did they raise their jobs? So we actually created this huge survey, got approval from the HR department to send it out. We sent it to, there was VPs, very high-level engineers, geoscientists all over, ones that were doing rotations, working internationally, and even just based in country. And it was a series of questions as to, you know, how many children do you have? You know, how is, what sort of child care being provided? You know, and in the end, we ended up publishing a paper on it. It was very, very interesting. For example, some ladies who worked rotation, they would have almost like transitional notes with their nannies, because when they're on rotation, that's when the nanny would come. And we could start to see some of these different demographics. And again, it's all what works for you as an individual. I don't mean to be slighting anybody who's decided they've gone that route. Just for personally, that was me. But again, I know it impacted my career in the end. I could probably be several layers higher in up the food chain now, but again, it's a decision that I made, and I'm not disappointed in it at all.
And so what were some of the technical challenges that you faced in your career?
Well, I alluded to earlier, I'm not the sharpest pencil in the box. So, and also too, for me, my learning style is more, it's got to be absorbed a little bit over time. So you'd be in certain situations or even in learning environments where you've got those type of engineers that, you know, they dream mathematical equations and they get it right now. And then there's folks like me where we kind of need to sit, absorb, and then finally the light goes on. So when I'm in some environments where you have to respond quick or absorb things quick, personally for me, I've struggled. But again, as I've aged and got more experienced, you know, I'm able to actually raise my hand and say, just give me a minute and, you know, I'll get back to you. But when you're a young engineer and then you feel that light bulb's not going on, you know, you'll have your moments where it's, you know, maybe I should find a new line or a different career to go into because I'm just not getting it. Well, some people get it instantaneously, and like for me, it just takes a bit. But you just got to persevere.
And what's the best advice that you've been given for working in the industry?
Well, one I already alluded to from that one lady VP who said, you know, get the best child care that you can afford. Also, there's two other pieces of advice. One was from an individual that encouraged me to publish my first paper. And of course, as a young engineer getting in front of a huge audience, say here at the annual technical conference and exhibition, it's very nerve-wracking. And I'll tell you, still to this day, and I'm now coming in 26 years into the business, I'll get up on a podium and I wonder if people can see my knees shaking, right? But that really helped build my communication skills too, because that's actually another factor in this business where that gave me advantage, say, over some of the other engineers, again, the ones who dream mathematical equations. You have to have the people skills. You have to be able to communicate your thoughts and ideas in the right manner for example, you convey something different for management as you would to a technical session audience, for example, right? And, you know, even for me and my staff or people I've worked with, they can be some of the brightest minds that are out there, but their careers are hampered just because they lack those skills, right? So presenting the paper and, of course, many fallout after, that really helps develop your communication skills and actually helps to network when you get out in front of people. And then the third piece of advice was a man by the name of Saeed Ali. He's a very strong volunteer within SBE. He encouraged me to start getting involved in the SBE international programs. I got on some of the early advisory committees and then chaired many conferences and stuff. And that has really not only helped me network, but it also, too, has opened me to other facets of the industry instead of just my own little niche within my company, because all the companies, whether serving companies or operating companies, to get higher up the technical ladder, at some point, you not only need to be considered an internal expert in what you do, but also an industry expert. Well, how do you get known on the industry? It's through writing papers. It's through serving on some of these committees. And I actually chaired some of the international standards committees, too. Was I the brightest person to be leading that group? No. You get the brightest people on those committees working with you. And for me, that was some of the best training courses I ever had, too. And also helped develop the leadership skills. That's one thing, too, with SB and some of these other things. You know, as a young engineer in an oil company, you don't have a chance to start honing your leadership skills early on. These other venues do. So those are the three pieces of advice. The child care, the best child care, write industry papers, and then also volunteer. And primarily, I focus on SBE activities and that. But get out there and participate in the industry.
Well, that's a great lead-in for my last question, which is, how has being an SBE member affected your career?
I first joined SBE when I was in university in Edmonton, Canada. I remember when the student chapter was first formed. I served as vice president. My best friend served as president. And it was the first time we actually got to see, like, the DL programs, for example. People that you read about or hear about in the news, they're actually coming to your campus to talk. And then that just led on to other positions. I wasn't necessarily as active in SPE when I was in Canada outside of the student chapter, but of course the encouragement through Saeed Ali when I came to the U.S. Just really opened up the doors. And I would have never ever imagined in my career that I would have ever served on the board of directors. You know, I've just finished my 3-year term on the board. Wonderful, wonderful experience. Again, my SB activities are not going to stop just because I've rolled off the board. But it has positioned me now. I've had the chance to, especially on the board, work with leaders from other companies. And it actually, it's for some strange reason, it's honed my business sense, for example. You know, because you're in rooms of people, they're worried about the stock prices. You know, as a society, we're trying to understand, you know, how did we get to where we are within the downturn and where did we go? And then you just start absorbing all this, and because you got to understand that it's just not the engineering side of things. Our industry is so impactful to the economy that you also need to understand that too. And that's where SB has really helped me as well. And again, SB has become my own family. Coming to the main conference and exhibition is almost like a high school reunion now. You can't walk down the hallway without running into a few people, you know, that you've run through your career. And yeah, it's a wonderful experience. And then again, to be able to see all the influx of young students coming in. I watched some of the Petro Bowl and that this morning and seeing the enthusiasm. And to be honest, some of the questions they are answering, I'm getting old. I've forgotten some of those questions. But yeah, I was very impressed. And even in it, you know, still how much passion they have and excitement, it gets me excited. So yes, that was probably actually the best decision ever was to get that initial membership with SBE.
Well, thank you for your service, and also thank you so much for participating in our project.
Thank you very much, Amy.